What if the real reason you're struggling financially has nothing to do with budgeting apps or spending too much on coffee? Picture someone inheriting a trust fund but spending every dollar as soon as it arrives, living paycheck to paycheck despite being wealthy. Or consider someone raised in affluence who can't open their own mail, racking up late fees despite having plenty of money. These aren't stories about financial illiteracy, they're about something deeper. Money carries emotional weight that no spreadsheet can capture. We're all weird about money in our own ways, shaped by childhood experiences, family dynamics, and cultural messages about wealth and worth. That woman with the trust fund? She opposed economic inequality so fiercely that her brain sabotaged her own financial stability to resolve the cognitive dissonance. The one who couldn't open mail had never learned basic financial tasks because everything was handled for her. Our money problems aren't just mathematical. They're psychological, emotional, and deeply personal. Every financial decision you make is influenced by stories planted in your mind years ago. Maybe you watched your father grow resentful when your mother out-earned him, teaching you that discussing money breeds conflict. Perhaps you grew up in poverty and now identify so strongly with that struggle that behaviors leading to stability feel like betraying who you are. These aren't conscious choices, they're subconscious programs running in the background. Society reinforces this weirdness through aggressive silence. We've normalized talking about sex and politics on first dates, yet salary discussions remain taboo even among close friends. Many workplaces explicitly forbid employees from discussing compensation, keeping everyone in the dark about their market value. When we suppress money conversations, they don't disappear. They emerge later as anxiety, shame, or explosive arguments. Meanwhile, your brain is working against you in other ways. That ancient survival mechanism that once helped your ancestors detect resource scarcity now makes you feel perpetually lacking even when you have enough. The comparison instinct that kept early humans safe in their tribes now fuels endless scrolling through social media where you're bombarded with curated highlight reels that make your life feel inadequate, followed immediately by ads selling solutions to that manufactured inadequacy. Credit cards eliminate the pain of paying. Cash triggers immediate loss. Plastic doesn't. Studies show people spend more with credit because your brain's pain centers stay quiet. Our brains prioritize immediate rewards over future consequences, and consumer culture exploits this by designing systems that manipulate your behavior. The solution isn't willpower, it's systems. Practice gratitude to rewire your prefrontal cortex. When you reflect on what you appreciate, your brain releases dopamine and serotonin, strengthening neural pathways linked to happiness. Try this. Close your eyes, breathe deeply, and think of three things you're grateful for that you normally take for granted. The more you activate these pathways, the easier they become to access, creating a buffer against spending temptation. Traditional budgeting starts with income and divides it up, triggering scarcity thinking. Flip the script. What would you need to earn to live without resentment? Classify expenses into three categories: bills and life, essentials, fun and BS, enjoyable non-essentials, and future and goals, savings and investments. Here's the game changer. Open two checking accounts. Fund one strictly for bills and life, the other exclusively for fun and BS. Once your fun and BS account is funded, spend guilt-free. This eliminates exhausting mental calculations of, can I afford this, and replaces them with, how do I want to spend this? You're not tracking every purchase, you're simply checking balances regularly. This works brilliantly for couples too, allowing individual autonomy while maintaining joint responsibility. The key? Rules that eliminate unnecessary decisions, not more willpower. My goal was once to have no goals, not from lack of ambition, but because outcome-focused thinking paralyzes you. Set a goal to save $10,000 and you've created binary thinking, succeed or fail. Commit to saving 20% of every dollar indefinitely. There's no finish line, just a process you trust. Goals create rigidity. When life shifts, you feel like a failure rather than adapting. Waves erode cliffs through relentless repetition, not one massive strike. Financial health works the same way. Consistently saving small amounts transforms your identity more powerfully than one large deposit. You become someone who saves, not someone who saved once. When a system underperforms, examine it without judgment. Should you adjust the percentage, increase income, both? This eliminates the shame spiral from failing at goals and replaces it with curiosity about optimizing your process. As a junior financial planner making $36,000 while advising clients earning 10 times that, I faced an uncomfortable truth. Saving is ultimately a function of earning. I biked to work, grew my own food, made cleaning products. I'd optimized frugality to its limit. The real problem? I was dramatically underpaid. Personal finance advice obsesses over cutting expenses because spending feels immediately controllable. But this approach has fatal flaws. There's always an expense floor, and focusing solely on costs traps you in scarcity thinking. Making money requires understanding how your work creates value for others and effectively communicating that value. Limiting beliefs sabotage us. If I enjoy it, I shouldn't get paid for it, prevents monetizing natural talents. Only people from good schools get paid well, stops you from challenging yourself. Your earning capacity expands when you question the rules you've internalized about what's possible. An emergency fund won't prevent disasters, but it stops bad situations from becoming financial catastrophes. Think of your financial life as a sandcastle. You control what you build, but not the inevitable tide. An emergency fund is your protective trench, which is why it should be your first savings priority. Remember the marshmallow experiment? Follow-up studies revealed children from reliable environments waited longer than those from unstable ones. If you grew up with financial instability, immediate consumption seems more rational. Our modern world compounds this with personal advertising machines designed to manipulate consumption. Many experts suggest saving 6 to 12 months of expenses. For someone earning $50,000 after taxes with $2,000 monthly essentials, that means $12,000 to $24,000. Focus on consistent small efforts rather than the intimidating total. Even $25 monthly is progress. Make saving automatic. In 2010, while preparing law school applications, I calculated my borrowing needs and realized monthly payments would consume 34% of my take-home pay as a public servant. This led to deeper questions. What if I hated the job after 10 years? How would this debt impact a future marriage? I realized law school would be financially catastrophic. We can never know with certainty the consequences of our decisions, but we can learn to make better choices. First, ensure your nervous system is regulated. You can't make good decisions from fight or flight mode. Daniel Siegel's window of tolerance describes our optimal arousal zone, where we handle emotions and think clearly. Trauma or stress pushes us outside this window into hyperarousal, anxiety, racing thoughts, or hypoarousal, numbness, disconnection. Before major financial decisions, regulate yourself through breathwork, exercise, music, or connection. Then use second-order thinking. Ask, and then what could happen, repeatedly to explore consequences beyond immediate outcomes. Debt repayment is practical, not moral, like washing dishes to avoid pests rather than from duty. Bad credit and late fees are consequences, not divine punishment. Though debt morality connections have ancient religious roots, responsibility should be shared with predatory lenders, not placed solely on borrowers. Living with unaddressed trauma resembles walking with a rock in your shoe. You can remove it through therapy or compensate by changing your gait, creating new problems elsewhere. Trauma manifests in debt patterns. Abuse survivors might overspend to prove their worth, while those in constant stress use purchases to avoid negative feelings. Escaping debt requires new behaviors, negotiating higher pay, consulting professionals, or shifting from victim mentality to accepting responsibility. Consider finding the gift in your debt situation: necessary lessons learned, deeper issues addressed, or obstacles overcome. This approach manages adversity while conserving energy for productive solutions. Saving $10,000 at 2% yields $18,114 after 30 years. Investing at 5% grows to $43,219. under your mattress? Still $10,000, worth far less after inflation. Despite being the only woman on my finance team, literally excluded from guys' night out, I learned not belonging fosters an open mind. Don't let an industry of old men in ill-fitting suits intimidate you. Today, you can invest from home in your underwear. Most people become wealthy by investing, not the reverse. You don't need thousands. Even $25 to $50 monthly works. Not investing guarantees losing money to inflation. Ask older generations what milk cost. That's inflation devaluing cash over time. Now is not a good time is the ultimate cop-out. Small investments early outperform larger ones later because compound interest needs time. Someone investing $5,500 annually from 25 to 35 will have $416,370 at 65, while someone starting at 35 will only have $232,499. Wealth isn't caviar and first-class flights. It's what you own, not what you spend. $1 million invested generates $50,000 annually at 5%, preserving principal indefinitely. When financially independent, your income comes from wealth rather than building wealth from income. Calculate your net worth by adding assets and subtracting debts. Focus on consistent behaviors like investing a percentage of all income, and your progress will compound over time. Financial stability is just the beginning. Your relationship with money evolves constantly. This work isn't about amassing wealth. It's about exercising power in a world that denies it to many. Minding your relationship with money is a radical act that amplifies your values. Even during tough times, you can find abundance by recognizing multiple perspectives exist in any circumstance. Seeing situations from various angles reveals options and illuminates powerlessness. Growth isn't about eliminating suffering, but learning to dance with it, trusting yourself to feel what you've been unwilling to feel. Your relationship with money demonstrates how powerful stories can be. The stories we tell ourselves create rules that impact behavior across all life areas. By unearthing hidden rules and changing them, you've proven you can transform other life stories. What you believe about your worth affects all decisions, not just financial ones. The tools you've gained can improve all relationships, especially with yourself. Your financial empowerment isn't just personal, it's political, revolutionary, and exactly what the world needs.